Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Today, we have to talk about the Rockets 113-92 loss against the Oklahoma City Thunder, Russell Westbrook's return game, as it were. And really, look, so this game, I had to decompress a little bit after this game, and I'm sure many of you did too. This was a game that you really wanted to win. You really wanted to win this game for Russell Westbrook. You really wanted to win this game because Chris Paul is on the Thunder. It's just like when the two teams matched up earlier this year, only the difference is it's Russell Westbrook's return game to Oklahoma City. This was such an emotionally charged game. The atmosphere was intense. It had the vibes of almost like a playoff game. It really did. And regrettably, the Rockets, they didn't come out to compete. They just didn't. You know, you look at how Oklahoma City started the game, so much more energy in that first quarter. Capping things off 37-21. And it would have been worse than that had Ben McLemore, Benny Mac and threes, not hit a three-pointer right there at the very end off of a pass from Russell Westbrook. So this game, it just... The Rockets tried their best to fight back into it, and I can explain away a lot of different things with this loss very easily. Second night of a back-to-back, no Eric Gordon, shots just weren't falling. I can explain away all those different things. But the thing that bothered me the most from this game, and I'm not angry about this loss. In a way, I'm almost not even frustrated. I'm more disappointed than anything. Because you could tell from the moment he stepped on the court how much this game meant to Russell Westbrook. And from the moment that he was on the court running around, it was great of him, I think, to see him do his usual Oklahoma City warm-up routine for the fans. You know, the different pointing to the crowds, the running to the corner, all that stuff after the highlight video of his career in Oklahoma City played. The fans went wild for it. And you could tell that city, that state shows him a lot of love. And he came out ready to play. Westbrook was literally the only bright spot for this team all night. Maybe you can make an argument for Chris Clemens in garbage time. But Westbrook was the only bright spot for this team across the entire evening. He had no help from anybody else all night long. And that's frustrating. That's frustrating and it's disappointing. So maybe I am a little frustrated. And I'm sure many of you are as well. But it's not the end of the world. In a vacuum, yeah, this game sucks. In a vacuum, you look at it and you're like, okay, nobody hit shots. The team shot, as a team, they shot 11 of 40 from behind the arc, but that's including garbage time. So you cut out the garbage time stats. So I'm taking out Isaiah Hartenstein, I'm taking out Clemens, and I'm taking out Michael Frazier. The team was 7 of 30 from behind the arc during the actual game. So 7 of 30 behind the arc, that's roughly 23-24% from behind the three-point line. It's really tough to beat a team when you shoot 24% from downtown. And look, we know what this team is as far as their struggles defensively. And so when you play that awful on offense, I'm sorry, you're going to lose games. It's damn near impossible for this team to have a night where James Harden is off and has an off game, where the role players are off and having off games, and where the only guy who's playing well is Russell Westbrook. We've seen versions of this game before with the roles completely flipped, where James Harden is having a good game and Russell Westbrook is having a bad game. Or we've seen versions of this where Russell Westbrook and James Harden are both having great games and the shooters are still not hitting shots. Or Clint Capella isn't able to, you know, man up and actually, you know, give us a 2020 game, or give us at least some semblance of a reliable game. You know, Clint Capella, 8 points, 11 rebounds, not great. He was getting shoved around by Steven Adams quite a bit. I don't know. This game is... I'm not a sunshine-pumping eternal optimist, but I'm also not down in the dumps the world is ending about this game. I think that it's too much for me emotionally to swing one way or the other, personally. I try to keep things a little bit more middle of the pack. So yeah, you can point to a bunch of different reasons for why this loss happened, but the biggest issue to me was just the lack of energy, just the lack of want to from this team. Yeah, it's the second night of a back-to-back. Yeah, you're probably a little tired, but this game, of all the games that you could have picked to not come out with the energy and intensity to match that of Russell Westbrook, this game should not have been that one. This game was important to Russell Westbrook, and it really should have been important to the Rockets too, because you had Chris Paul over there who's having what looks like the time of his life with Oklahoma City, and it's like when you run into your ex, you know, a few months after the breakup, and you know, they're in the store and they're looking good, you know, all hair done up, put together, nice clothes, whatever, and you're out there rocking sweats and a t-shirt, and you got probably like a little like food stain on the top of the t-shirt, and you're there buying like six pack of Oreos or something. It's like one of those. We saw Chris Paul living his best life with Oklahoma City, and the Rockets are here and they put up a total stinker. And to build on that metaphor, it's like Westbrook is your new bae, and he's right there to your right, and you're looking all kinds of slobby, and Westbrook's all put together too, and he's looking at maybe his ex, and he's like, what's going on there? Anyways, maybe a terrible metaphor, I don't know. This game was emotionally charged, and the Rockets just didn't come ready to play. That's basically it. Now, we've seen this team when they come ready to play. We've seen them when they come out with the intensity and effort that they need to have. And I want to keep following along this train of thought, these points, and we'll get there in just a second. But first, I have a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. So once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, and we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets' 113-92 loss on the road against Oklahoma City, dropping the team to 25-12 on the season, just 12-8 on the road. Oklahoma City improves to 22-16 on the season, 13-6 at home. So I mentioned it briefly at the end of the last segment, but one of the things that has me slightly less concerned about this team, and we've seen it in the past couple years with Chris Paul, and we've seen it during the 17-18 season, the 18-19 season, this team is one of the oldest teams in the league. The Rockets are an old team, and you combine that with the fact that they're an old team and an undersized team, it's really tough to expect this team to come out on a nightly basis especially on the second night of a back-to-back, and have them put their best foot forward, because they have to do so much as a group. They have to rebound by committee. They have to defend as a team. They can't just, they don't have, apart from PJ Tucker, they don't have any one player that you can just say, all right, we're going to stick you on this person and we're going to leave you on an island and expect you to not get burnt. They don't have anybody like that apart from PJ Tucker. And PJ Tucker is one man. This isn't the 17-18 season where they have Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute and you've got all these plus defenders. This is a season where you've got a bunch of average defenders, maybe a couple play. You've got PJ Tucker, who's an excellent defender. You've got Clint Capella, who is an above average defender. Austin Rivers, above average. We'll give Eric Gordon above average, but he wasn't playing in this game. So everybody else is basically average or at sometimes detrimental to the defense. So it's really tough to expect this veteran team, this older basketball club, to come out on a nightly basis and put the effort in that they need to on that side of the basketball in order to win games. So sometimes they just, their defense isn't going to be where it needs to be, but we've seen the spurts and we've seen the times where their defense does key in. And I'm of the belief that were this a playoff series, were this a playoff game, first off, there's no back-to-backs in the playoffs, which is beneficial to an older team, a veteran team. And then past that, playoffs are just they're a different beast. You know, we hear about playoff fatigue quite often from the teams that, you know, make it to their respective conference finals, or to the teams that make it to the finals repeatedly year in, year out. LeBron James, what was it, 8 straight finals, 9 straight finals appearances? You know, that's deep playoff runs every year that he's putting on his body. But by the same token, the Rockets have a bit of playoff fatigue. Now, is that the excuse? God, no. It's not. I'm not making excuses for this team. But I'm just trying to think of some of the reasons why this loss isn't the end of the world. Because Rockets fans have a pretty nasty habit of the sky is falling after every loss. Now, does that mean we don't highlight the bad and try and figure out what they need to do moving forward to fix it? No, we absolutely need to do that. But it's not the end of the world. It's a loss in the middle of January with plenty more basketball to be played this season. If I wanted to go back to the 17-18 season, which people hold in such high regard as far as this Rockets club is concerned, I would point back to mid-December, late December, where the team went on a 5-game skid. They lost to the Lakers and to the Clippers, both at home. Then they lost on the road to the Thunder, to the Celtics, and then to the Wizards of all teams. And these, apart from the Celtics game, these weren't really close losses. It's just, you know, they got blown out by the Wizards that year, 121-103. And the sky was falling then, too. And we saw what happened with that team. Now, am I comparing this team to the 17-18 team, to the talent level of that team? No. That was arguably the most talented Rockets team in franchise history, and they ran up against the wall that was the Golden State Warriors. But there's going to be a part of everybody, myself included, and a lot of you guys, that want to compare this Rockets team to last year's team, or especially to that 17-18 team, and it stings a lot when we do that, because we look at that team, we look at what that version of Chris Paul was able to provide to this ball club, and we get nostalgic, we get reminiscent, we start thinking, why did we ever do that trade? Look at what Chris Paul is doing with the Thunder right now. The problem is, Chris Paul has a different role on that Thunder team than he would here in Houston. And that's the thing that people need to come to accept. Chris Paul is able to basically spend the first 3 quarters of basketball getting everybody else involved, getting everybody else open looks. He's able to rely on SGA and Dennis Schroeder for much of the actual ball handling duties or scoring duties throughout the early part of the game, as well as getting guys like Adams and Gallinari involved. And then, come fourth quarter, he's able to actually finally turn it on and take over the game, which is why he's the most clutch player in the NBA this year. For the Rockets, he would not have that role this year. So for everybody who's constantly saying, we should have never traded Chris Paul, this team would be the number one seed in the West, all this stuff. I don't believe that's the case. Because here in a Rockets uniform, Chris Paul would be having to shoulder the same load that Westbrook is trying to shoulder, and he just can't do that anymore. And a big chunk of that comes down to coaching. A big chunk of that comes down to how Chris Paul was being utilized here in a Rockets jersey. And that's on D'Antoni. Chris Paul was being used exactly the same way we're using Russell Westbrook right now, which is basically a one-man offensive machine akin to James Harden. The offense is completely built around a dominant ball handler who basically plays their version of offensive basketball, and it either leads to shots for the person in question, James Harden or Russell Westbrook, or for the past couple years, Chris Paul. Or it leads to a kick out and then ideally slightly more ball movement after that to an open shooter. That's the Rockets offense to a T. Now, D'Antoni does occasionally call some, you know, nice out of bounds plays, and they do have some actions that they run to get guys like Clint Capella some open looks, or Eric Gordon, the elevator screens and stuff like that. But for the most part, the offense really is just high pick and roll or post play from Westbrook or whatever you may have that involves the ball being in Westbrook or James Harden's hands and then them creating. I don't believe Chris Paul is capable of that level of play anymore, which is why this trade seemingly worked out for both ball clubs. Oklahoma City gets a floor general in Chris Paul, who can orchestrate the rest of the young guys, who can orchestrate the rest of the team, and then actually take over in the fourth quarter. The Rockets get another engine alongside James Harden, another motor who can put the team on his back and carry them for stretches of the game. Now, which system is more fragile, which system is more prone to failure? Maybe the Rockets one is. Because if you have a game where Westbrook has a bad game or Harden has a bad game, then suddenly for stretches of the game, you're going to look really bad on offense. Unless for some reason your shooters are clicking on all cylinders that game, then you're going to look really rough. And we saw that in this game. We saw James Harden struggle completely. He finished the game with just 17 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. He had a block, 5 of 5 from the charity stripe, 2 of 9 from behind the arc, 5 of 17 overall. Really rough night for James Harden. Arguably his worst game of the season. And I would go so far as to say James Harden's absolute worst game of the season. Westbrook, 34 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, just 1 of 6 from downtown, 14 of 26 overall, though. I'll take 14 of 26 from Westbrook any day of the week. I'll take that 34 from Westbrook. Hell, I'll take that 34 from Westbrook along with the 1 of 6 from downtown if it means he was 14 of 26 overall. But the problem is nobody else showed up. And I think a big chunk of that falls on Mike D'Antoni. I think that he ran the guys into the ground against the Hawks the night before. I think that Isaiah Hartenstein, there's no reason for him to have only gotten play come the fourth quarter. I think Isaiah Hartenstein has proven that he's got great chemistry with Russell Westbrook. And for a team that has a lot of size compared to this Rockets club, you've got Steven Adams, Gallinari, Ferguson, Shea. You've got a lot of size out there. Apart from Chris Paul, that Thunder team has a lot of size. Isaiah Hartenstein would have provided no drop-off in size for when Clint Capella sat down. But instead, the Rockets opted to go small. They opted to just... I don't understand Mike D'Antoni's mentality sometimes. The Thunder out-rebounded the Rockets 52-39. That's just painful in the rebounding department. Really is. And I feel like a chunk of that could have been avoided, and I feel like Westbrook could have paired himself up with Isaiah Hartenstein, and we've seen flashes between those two guys where those two guys have great chemistry. For whatever reason, Westbrook hasn't developed that with Capella, but with Hartenstein, he's got it. So it's a little crummy that we didn't get to see those two guys pair up and maybe have a chance to dig themselves out of the hole that they put themselves in the first half of this game. I was really hopeful that they would dig their way out, have a strong second half performance like the Spurs game from mid-December, and that just didn't happen. James Harden never found his shot. Westbrook continued playing like he was, but it just wasn't enough in this game. So we've got our final segment here in just one moment, so do not go anywhere. And we are back here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Final thoughts on the Rockets' 113-92 loss against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, I will throw it out there that I did a take on this segment, and I had to delete it because I came back in from the break and I said Oklahoma City Warriors, which was maybe something deeply rooted in my subconscious that this loss was so painful that I immediately associated it with the Golden State Warriors instead of Oklahoma City. So there's that. I didn't keep that cut in here for obvious reasons, but I figured it was funny, so I figured I'd share it with you guys. Now, the way this loss kind of affects the standings is the Rockets now drop to the fourth seed. They are tied up with the Utah Jazz, but they currently hold, I guess, the tiebreaker. So they're sitting in the fourth seed. The Jazz are the fifth seed. So you've got Lakers 1, Nuggets 2, Clippers 3, Rockets at 4, Jazz are at 5, then the Mavericks, Thunder, and Spurs kind of round things out. Now, the Rockets are still just a game out of the 2 seed, and they're only a half game back in the loss column compared to the Denver Nuggets, who sit at 26-11. Rockets are at 25-12. And so I'm going to end this final segment with some optimism. Now, it's not just blind faith that this Rockets team are still contenders. They are. They are contenders. Because there's a bunch of contenders this year. Because I don't think there's any one team. We'll say the Bucks. I think the Bucks and maybe the Lakers, although it still remains to be seen how the Lakers actually start faring against some decent competition, because they are currently, I want to say, 7-7 against teams over 500, which is not a good look for them. But any LeBron James-led team is guaranteed to be a contender, with the exception of last year's Lakers squad. So I'd say the Bucks and Lakers are probably maybe not head and shoulders above everybody else, but they are in their own tier as far as contender status goes. But then following that, especially in the West, I would still happily lump the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Rockets, the Jazz, and probably the Mavericks all in the same tier. The Mavericks are a young squad, though. This will be the first time they make the playoffs in a while. And we'll see if they actually have what it takes. As far as how the Rockets fare against some of these other playoff teams, these contenders, these teams that have championship aspirations, they're 1-1 against the Nuggets. They're 2-1 against the Clippers. They have yet to play the Jazz. They have yet to play the Lakers. They're 0-1 against the Mavericks. And they are now 1-1 against the Thunder, 1-1 against the Spurs. So it's not like any one of these teams just has the Rockets' number, which is why I'm not overly concerned. Because again, you have a team with James Harden, who in my opinion has played like the best player in the NBA this year, and then you've got Russell Westbrook, who can give you a game exactly like what he gave you against the Thunder. That was a hell of a game from Westbrook. He just didn't have any help. And James Harden doesn't do that consistently. Here's the thing, is James Harden does not have these bad games. He is one of the most consistent superstars in the league. And the production with which he provides on a nightly basis, it's hard to be completely upset at him for this game. Because what he gives you so much and so often, every game. And then he has this one, you know, he has two kind of rough games back to back. And we've seen the argument before that James is much more of a rhythm versus rust player. He definitely likes to be in rhythm, and taking days off definitely messes with James as far as his shooting percentages, as far as his rhythm, as far as, you know, getting to his spots, as far as his shooting, all this stuff. James likes to be in rhythm, and I think there's, you know, a lot of people who are concerned, oh, well, you know, James is too tired come the playoffs, and no, you know, there's no reason for him to be playing 40 minutes a night, but James is built to handle 35 to 37 a night. That's a respectable number. Anything past that, and I think you're getting into the danger territory where you're wondering that you're maybe running him a little bit ragged. But I think that with James on your team and with Russ still able to provide these types of games, this team can beat anybody in the playoffs. And that's where my optimism lies. Because this team is still one of the top three offenses in the league. We know that this team isn't going to be a great defensive juggernaut. That's just not their identity. That's not Mike D'Antoni's identity. That's not this team. But we do know that this team can dial it in for stretches, maybe not a whole game, but for stretches in a game, and B, locked in on defense. Now, has a poor defensive team won the title recently, in recent memory? No. But who's to say this couldn't be the first club to do it? This is going to be the first team since Steph Curry, KD, that has two former MVPs on it that's going to, you know, be making a push towards the title. I'm not talking all time. I'm just talking recent memory. I don't have, like, history of recent MVPs and them pairing up and stuff right in front of me. But I'm pulling from recent memory. And again, we've seen the highs from this team. They just handily beat the Nuggets and the Sixers. Those are not insignificant wins. They're 2-1 against the Clippers. You don't throw away all the success that this team has had this season just because of one frustrating loss on the second night of a back-to-back where everybody except for Russell Westbrook and Chris Clemens in garbage time had bad games. The season is not over. There's still plenty of hope. This team is going to get itself back into rhythm. They're going to get Eric. Oh, and Eric Gordon didn't play. I'm sure I mentioned that earlier, but Eric Gordon didn't play either. So for everybody that's out there, you know, doom and gloom, this team's not winning anything. No, that's not the case. Are they championship favorites? No, they're not. And that's an okay place to be. You don't have to be the overwhelming favorites for a title to still enjoy the ride, to still enjoy the wins, to enjoy the games, to enjoy every single play from this team, to enjoy the miraculous shots that James Harden hits, to enjoy the explosiveness of Russell Westbrook, because that's how I find joy in basketball. I don't sit here and just think it's championship or bust. That's not a fun way for me to experience this sport or to even talk about this sport or to report on it. There's no fun in that for me. If your idea of a winning season is a championship, then 29 out of 30 teams have disappointing seasons every year. There's too many teams out there. You can find happiness in how these guys play, in the ups and downs, and that's sports. Now, would it be great to have this team bring a championship back to the city of Houston? Absolutely. It'd be insane. It'd be awesome. Do I think they have a chance to do that? Absolutely. Are they the favorites? Probably not. And that's still okay. They don't have to be the favorites. The Cavs definitely weren't the favorites against the Warriors, and they pulled off one of the greatest upsets in history. That will go down as one of the greatest wins across all sports. One of the greatest titles in any sport, in any decade, ever, because of the insurmountable odds that they faced against that really stacked Golden State Warriors team. Would have been very similar to the Rockets had they actually toppled the juggernaut of the Golden State Warriors back in 2018. But they didn't. And the thing is, this year there isn't a juggernaut that looks like that. The Bucks and the Lakers are not the Golden State Warriors. They are not infallible. They don't have the cheat code that is Kevin Durant just waiting to take over a game late after Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have already burned you for three quarters. They don't have that luxury. And we've yet to see the Rockets play the Lakers. Saturday, January 18th. That's going to be a big test for this team. So again, I'm going to sign things off by saying, yeah, this loss was a bit disappointing. You would have hoped that they would have put forth a bit better effort for Russell Westbrook for his return night. And actually, I guess before I sign off, I will mention there was that shot, and it's now circulating around the national media. Everybody's freaking out about it, where Russell Westbrook was sitting right there at the end of the bench by himself while the team was huddled up. And everybody's making this something that it's not. That's Russ's spot on the bench. That's where he sits. That's his spot. And yeah, you can say that the entire team was over there huddled around D'Antoni, listening to whatever he was saying. I don't blame him. This was an emotionally charged night. He came back in and he gave it his all and had a hell of a game, and nobody else showed up to play with him. Do I think he's going to suddenly tomorrow go to Daryl Morey and demand a trade back to Oklahoma City? No, that's not what's going to happen. And even still, James Harden, noticing that Russ was sitting there at the end of the bench, went over to talk to him. And that's their friendship working. That's James probably going over and saying, look, I'm sorry, man. I am sorry. I had a crap game. Everybody else had a crap game. We're sorry. We let you down. And maybe this is a turning point for the team. Maybe this is something that gives Russ the ability to light the fire under everybody else and maybe get mad at everybody else a little bit. Say, you guys let me down. I need more from you guys. So we'll see. We'll see how this team responds to this loss. So far this season, they've responded to losses pretty well. They've gone on the three-game skid once earlier this season. But past that, they had the back-to-back losses, Brooklyn, then Miami, early in the season. And then they had the three-game skid, Denver, Clippers, and then Dallas at home. But past those two little stretches, they haven't had back-to-back losses. So I kind of don't expect them to come out and lose this Saturday afternoon game against Minnesota. It's a 4 p.m. tip-off. So a bit of an odd timing on that game. But I don't expect them to come out and lose that game. I expect them to come back stronger, regroup, and handle business. Because if you look at their schedule, it's pretty much looked like they've done just that. I mean, and I would put this loss against Oklahoma City right up there with the loss against the Miami Heat as far as really how embarrassing it felt and how disappointed everybody was in the loss. And right after that loss, they went on an 8-game winning streak. So it's very possible that this loss is actually a blessing in disguise for this Rockets ball club. And again, as far as Westbrook doing his LeBron James impersonation, sitting at the end of the bench away from everybody else, this wasn't that. LeBron was trying to get his entire team traded for Anthony Davis when he pulled that crap. Russell Westbrook just returned to the city that basically raised him for 11 years, played a hell of a night, nobody else showed up to play with him, and he lost. And for a guy who's as fiery, as fierce of a competitor as Russell Westbrook is, I sympathize with him. But past all that, that's his spot on the bench. He sits there. That is his spot. So maybe it doesn't have to be one or the other. The two things are not mutually exclusive. That is his spot on the bench, but he also could have been a little frustrated with the rest of the team and wanted to just distance himself for a moment, and that's okay. That's fine. I'd rather him do that than be in the middle of the huddle yelling at everybody on the sideline, causing a scene. Something, you know, Jimmy Butler-esque, if you will. So he didn't do that. He sat on the sidelines. He didn't let his emotions get the best of him, even in an emotional night like this one. So I sympathize with Russell Westbrook. James Harden will not be in his shooting funk forever, and this team will get back on track. And I don't think that's blind optimism. I think that's optimism rooted in what we've seen them do this season so far. They're inconsistent, yeah. But they usually bounce back from losses. So I think that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before the next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they publish to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking at track. Wow. That's how you guys know I don't just pre-record this segment. Anyways, that's how we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for this January 10th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.